Hey there, everybody. It is July the 20th, 2011, and you are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm Ken, and as always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us an email at thisshowissogay@aol.com, strolling on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn about all the latest happenings with our fun little gay show, and of course, strolling on over to the Facebook, typing in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. Shockingly and not at all surprisingly, a jam-packed show for tonight, and we got to get started. We have a guest to welcome. We have tons of guests to welcome. First guest, are you ready?
Yes.
All right, let me introduce you. Dr. Judy Bradford is the director of the Center for Population Research in LGBT Health and co-chair of the Fenway Institute, all out of Fenway Health. She is a professor emeritus at the Institute of Women's Health at Virginia Commonwealth University, an adjunct associate professor in the School of Public Health at Boston University. She holds a PhD from Virginia Commonwealth University, and her areas of research include methods for hard-to-reach populations, HIV and AIDS, epidemiology and prevention, lesbian health, transgender health, LGBT access to care. In short, she's providing the data to help us understand how to be healthier people who will, I assume, Judy, live forever.
That's what you're doing.
Okay. I just assume. Judy Bradford, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Thank you so much, Ken. I love the title of the show.
And it's a lot to live up to, I know.
Yeah, indeed.
But I'm not at all worried for this little segment.
Well, great. I do sort of work that is boring for many, many people, so it's nice to have time to talk about it in a fun way.
You get to go around and tell people my research is so gay. You should try.
Exactly. Who else gets to do that?
So let's do a little Dr. Judy Bradford, This Is Your Life. What was your path? How would you describe your path to focusing your life, your work on LGBT health?
Oh, that's a great question. I've had multiple careers before I got to this. I taught tennis for many years.
Me too. I'm a tennis instructor too. Look at that.
Wow. I bet you didn't play, well, I bet you did. We both probably played men's doubles.
Well, no one likes to play men's doubles with me because I'm a singles player and I like to pretend there's no one up at net. But yes, go ahead, Judy.
Yeah. So I did that. I was also a substance abuse and family therapist.
Okay.
And I worked in prisons doing work with young male inmates before I went back to school and became a research person.
And what is it about LGBT health that really motivates you to research?
Well, I'm sort of a social justice fairness person, and my interests have always been in people who were vulnerable to particular things that society mostly causes because of who they were. So that part of me has always been the strongest part, and I think I just eventually ended up back in PhD school because I was a single lesbian mother. I needed a job that had a health plan and a retirement plan. And so, you know, I just gradually got there.
Nice.
And then I've been doing this for 25 years or more.
Well, as I mentioned in your intro, one of your areas of research is looking at different methods for hard-to-reach populations.
Right.
Which populations do you think are really struggling to access health care these days?
Well, I think the sort of classic had been people who didn't have health care insurance, so poverty or economic challenges, and those are still real, although I think our current administration, Washington, is trying to do something about that.
Mm-hmm.
Language issues are another problem. People who come from other cultures, including LGBT people and the languages that we speak, which providers don't always understand. So I think it's those kind of economic differences, cultural differences, and in some cases just purely geography.
Right.
But it's more about not quite fitting in or being understood by the larger population of the country.
Do you see a lot of geographical trends to your research?
Well, I've done sort of survey research and program evaluation for nearly three decades now, and I think what you find is that depending on where people live, the culture is different, the resources are different, the social attitudes may be different. So you have to adapt your research approaches and your methods to each one of those different unique situations, really. I think that's the major challenge.
Now, back in April, when you were first supposed to be on the show and then there was a fire, but that had nothing to do with you. You wrote, back in April, when this was a little bit more current, you wrote a blog entry for the Huffington Post entitled "A Roadmap for a New Day in LGBT Health." And I want to read a quote from that. You wrote, quote, While LGBT people are all adversely affected to one degree or another by the same structural problem, discrimination, the differences within our own community are vast. There is no one-size-fits-all approach that can possibly work. Medical providers to the LGBT community and medical researchers as well must tailor their approaches to take into account age, gender, race, and economic status, rather than putting us all under one a standardized LGBT umbrella. Where can we start that work? Because it strikes me, well, gosh, that's going to be it would be enough if we could get medical providers and medical researchers to include sexual orientation, but another to have them parse out, hey, there's different sections in this community.
Right. Yes, thanks for reminding me about that, because I think that that's really the key to all of this when we think about LGBT health, because just like any other group of people who live in this country, we're very diverse. Mm-hmm. We are basically a stratum of the whole population. We're like a little small USA population, and so within us is just as much diversity as there is within the general population, and we know how it works in the general population, that all of those things that were mentioned have an impact on certainly on your health care and your access to care. But you can take a couple of examples in LGBT people that I think drive the point home. What's happening with young people right now who are singled out in school because they're gay, and how it is that some kids, if they're from more fortunate families, their families, you know, care about these issues and support them or may have the means to send to move their kids to another school. Just in that way, the privilege of the family and the caring of the family may make a difference for a queer youth. In older LGBT people, it's more about, I mean, it's the same kind of underlying issues, but it's about who's going to take care of you, and are you going to have to move in, you know, as I did, move from Virginia to Boston because I didn't want to be an old lesbian in a straight nursing home in Virginia. I thought, if I'm going to have to do this, let me go to a place where people will understand it better. So, you know, older LGBT people are much less likely to have a partner and to have children than heterosexual people are. And this makes it really difficult. Plus, you know, their attitudes were formed in a different age. People came out when it wasn't safe to do that. Mm-hmm. And it's different for young people now. So those are just two of the kinds of things that really break out the differences within our overall community.
I can't tell you how many times a day I say to people, gosh, I do not want to be an old lesbian living in a straight nursing home in Virginia. I say it every day, all the time. It just comes up. It just flies out of my mouth.
Well, just don't let it happen to you, Ken.
All right. Well, it's something I'm actively working on. So
great.
It's a daily struggle. We all have our struggles.
Yes, we do.
Now, I do want to talk some about, because, look, I say this every week, that I don't think we spend even a fraction of the time that we should be spending talking about trans issues. And I know trans health is just, I've read the research, I've read the reports, and it's pretty bleak.
It is bleak, and in a way, I think you could say that all of these other differences and challenges we're talking about are simply magnified for transgender people. Mm-hmm. The rates of disparities we have, for instance, in smoking are huge between LGBT people in general and other people, but when you get into the trans population, it's magnified several times more. And so transgender health is just not really understood in the way that, you know, not so very long ago, people didn't understand gay and lesbian health. It's a desperate situation, quite honestly, and we have to learn more about it and develop ways of interacting with transgender people that makes them feel safer. It was the big issue out of the Institute of Medicine report. Except for the recommendation specifically around transgender health, all of the other recommendations focused on specific areas, like general areas, social influence, inequities. But we picked out the transgender piece to say, with this population, everything is needed. We just don't know much.
Right, right. Well, now, you were on an advisory board that created the Institute of Medicine's report, The Health of Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender People, Building a Foundation for Better Understanding. I was looking through that report, and I was having two reactions, Judy. On the one hand, it was from my own doctoral research perspective of, holy cow, we have so much more research to do, and there's a lot of change to enact. Right. But then the other side of me was distinctly more emotional, more of a depressing despair of being part of a community whose health is so at risk. As a researcher, how do you incorporate in kind of the emotional side? Because you are looking, as you just talked about, with trans issues, as you're with youth, you are looking at issues that also you read the research and there's an emotional reaction there too. How do you incorporate that into your work?
You're a smart guy, Ken, because I think that this is really what the challenge of the report was and the excitement of being part of the committee that actually designed and wrote the report. Many of us were LGBT people who were on the committee, and so we'd live this life, and we live it every day. And because of the kind of work we do and the reasons we were on that committee, most of us are really strong in the left brain and, you know, not so much, you know, in control maybe of our emotional life. We tried to do both of these things in the report, and we were commissioned to do that by Raynard Kington, a very well thought of, outstanding African American scientist who was deputy head of NIH. And Raynard said to us, you know, a very important part of your job is to recognize that the American population doesn't really know or get what the LGBT thing is about. And so write this report in a way that can educate people, not just to folks who have, you know, advanced degrees and think of methodologies all the time, but people who can understand this and learn something about the population, because this is a stigmatized population. Right. And so the emotional side of this was how to swallow this, really, and write about your own people and what that brings up in you, and also then to stay in touch with your scientist-researcher side that says, you know, you have to do this based on the literature we have. Integrating those two things was, I think, a challenge for us as individuals, and hopefully it comes through in the report, which I think you've just said that it does.
It does.
We created these lenses through which to, you know, to help ourselves and other people figure out how these things come together. Minority stress, you know, the life course thing that we've talked about, how it is that if you are a racial minority, things are going to be worse for you than they are for a similar person who's, you know, a Caucasian person, and then your social environment. And those things are the ways that we think if you look at the literature through these lenses, then you start to see how it can come together. But it's a big deal.
It's such a different model, and I hope I hope I'm not going to be about to be dismissive of any of my doctoral colleagues and their own research. But, you know, when I look at some of my colleagues who are in different fields of history and art history and you know, anything else, that they go to the conference and they present their research. And sure, if they're having a bad day, maybe it affects how they present it. But for me, you know, when I go to a conference and I'm doing my presentations on my research on LGBT youth, if I'm having a particularly bad gay day, it absolutely affects how I present my research, because my research is so tied into who I am as well.
Right.
And I often question, well, gosh, is that a good idea that my research is so tied into who I am?
I think it's a great idea. I think it wouldn't be so great if there were only people who are immersed in the life who did this research,
right,
because I think one of the strengths of this IOM panel was that it was a mix of people who had worked in this area and lived in this area, some who were heterosexual people who'd done some research in this area, but other outstanding folks who didn't know the community and hadn't worked in it before. And so these things kind of counteract each other.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I think that this world of studying LGBT health and understanding it would be very blank if there weren't some of us in the community who were doing it.
Right.
But I think we need others, too.
We like allies. Allies are good.
Totally, yes.
Right.
But, yeah, sometimes you just feel like going home and weeping.
Yes.
Or even while you're talking.
Now, you've done a lot of advocacy work as well, and notably culminating in the U.S. Department, the Health and Human Services announcing that sexual orientation would be included in their major research initiatives. How does your advocacy, how is advocacy, Judy, different than research, Judy?
Well, I have this phrase, when advocacy meets the scientific method.
Nice.
I think it's a personal collapsing point on the inside. Because it is a challenge to put these two together, and you just, for me, it's like a boundary issue. And then having the privilege in my own professional life of doing community research with people who are, in essence, the people who would benefit, hopefully, from the research. So I try to always merge those things, because otherwise I think you just aren't getting the most that you can out of your effort.
I feel we could have been doing tennis analogies this whole time just to make you the complete player. We'll try to incorporate that in from here on out. But as I alluded to, the HHS announced last week that sexual orientation measures would be included in their National Health Indicator Survey. So two-part questions. First, when they announced that, did everyone over at Fenway dance a jig? And part two, tell everyone why that is so significant that they will be including this on the NHIS.
So, yeah, I think great hurrahs from everyone with a little bit of a caveat that on federal surveys it's critical to have these questions, no doubt. But when it comes to the recommendation about including them in electronic health records, then it raises questions around privacy, security of data systems, some of the age differences, let's say, in patients who may be more or less comfortable with that. So it's you need that information, and health systems need it. How are you going to collect it and be sensitive to the patients is something, of course, that we deal with here at Fenway, because we have both a research institute and a health center that serves almost 20,000 people a year.
Wow.
So it is, I think, you know, these are great things to have happening. The survey, federal surveys piece, is going to be relatively easy. The other one's going to take some time and effort to figure out how you adapt it to different situations. And it's important because if you aren't on the federal system side, if you aren't counted when the data are being collected, then you can't make a case for the dollars you need to conduct the research that's missing and to design and test the services that people need. You just are basically invisible. So it's in that regard, it's somewhat like when racial issues began to be prominent in this country, and there was a reaction to include those other cultural groups. And so if we aren't counted, then in essence we're just invisible when it comes to policy initiatives and funding. So you just have to do it, and you have to do it in a way that goes beyond what the census can do with same-sex households. It leaves out too many people. I think from the question of the health records side, you have to do it because if providers who we have, you know, a number of studies that have shown that provider-patient relationships with LGBT people often are not ideal and in some cases are dismissive or disrespected. So providers can't really do the kind of work that they need to do with individual patients if they don't understand the larger picture. So it's a lot that has to be done to address those kinds of concerns.
Now, this is just between us, Judy. We won't tell anybody else. Is there not even a little part of you, oh gosh, this probably indicates what kind of researcher I am, that when the HHS made this announcement that you're thinking, oh God, I'm about to get a lot more data?
Both a curse and a blessing.
I'm just saying. I am admittedly a qualitative researcher because I don't like numbers. But yes, if I had seen that announcement, I would have said, yay, and oh God, I need another intern.
Yeah, well, I'm really working on that very hard right now for exactly what you say, data everywhere. And who is going to do this? Thank goodness we've made some progress over time and people have gotten trained. But you need the qual people as well as the quant people.
We're good people.
Very good people.
We're not as flaky as people think we are. It's just not true.
I think you have something to contribute. I do.
Now you have, and this is exciting. Because look, I'm a dean. I'm a dean at a college. I like things like this. You have a summer institute coming up, do you not?
Absolutely. We're starting on Monday.
Tell everyone about the summer institute. We're getting students involved.
This is part of our plan in the Pop Center to assist in training the next generation of LGBT scientists. NIH funds us, has funded us for 5 years to implement this program. It's the first ever that we can find. When we started it last year and we were working on a curriculum, we thought, and that's when we realized, there's no textbook.
How do you do this?
I know. But it went really well. We have a competitive application program. Students can apply from all over, anywhere. You have to be from this country to be funded through this particular grant, but we can take students from other places as well. So we have many more applicants that we can involve. We had I think, almost four times as many this year as we could accept. We have a rigorous two-stage admissions committee. People get, you know, they have to go into competition with everybody else who applies, and if they are among the best, then we take them in. And we, it's a 4 weeks intensive program. It involves stats camp. You have to spend a week getting your statistics skills up to, you know, to snuff. And then there are lectures by great LGBT health scientists come into Boston and do it. And when they come out, you know, they, like last year's cohort, the students in our first year, really felt like this was now theirs to do. They want to interview the students for this year. They're sending them comments and suggestions. You know, these people basically mostly go to school in places and faculty work in places where they don't have a strong program in LGBT health.
I have to be very honest with you. I think, and I've been thinking this through over the past couple seconds, I think I would rather be an old lesbian in a straight nursing home in Virginia than go to stats camp.
We'll have to design one of these for qualitative people.
Well, although I do want to ask, now I'm sure there's downtime, and even though it's quite, I'm sure it is quite the intensive, do you focus in with these students on the emotional side and how this research
yes.
might affect them?
Yes, we do. Our lecturers who are very personal about their presentations, we ask them to do several things when they come and present to the class. And one of those things is their own development as a scientist in LGBT research. So this gives people an opportunity to basically talk about their development over time, incorporating what it was like for them when they came out, if they're up for talking about that.
Yeah.
Just the development of their careers and their lives. It's very emotional. Also very important, because it helps the students and all of us connect those two pieces that you mentioned earlier, Ken. It's not, when you work with a vulnerable population, whether or not you are a member of it,
right.
you have to integrate those things. Otherwise, you aren't doing your work right.
Right. Now, if you need me to just pop on over, it's less than 2 hours to Boston, and give them a lecture on when you have to present your research on a gay syndicated radio show, I'm there.
You'll be the first person we call.
I want to be number one. If I hear that someone else gets called for that lecture, if I see it in a brochure somewhere, I'm not going to be happy.
We'll try to put it into this year's curriculum, and next year for sure.
Now, we have to talk very quickly about your musical selections for this week's show. Now, this is the part of the show, Dr. Judy Bradford, where you need to tell our listening audience what your song selections say about Dr. Judy Bradford.
Well, that's really interesting, because they're kind of different.
I know. This is going to be fun. So we'll do them both. Judy, what does the Village People's YMCA say about Judy Bradford?
It says that they're, by experience going to Gay Pride in New York City and marching with the Gay Men's Chorus, you know, being YMCA was one of the highlights of my life, and I still think that is one of the best gay songs ever.
Nice. Yes. And then on the other side of the spectrum,
yes.
What does Mavienne Rose say about Judy Bradford?
Oh, you know, come on. I'm a lesbian who, you know, used to be a heterosexual person. And there's just nothing like the love that you find when you get to the right place in your life, you find the right person. It's what life is all about, really.
Lovely. Oh, yes. That was very well done. Very well done.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Now, where can folks go to learn more about all the cool research that everyone over at the Fenway Institute is doing?
They can come to our website for Fenway Health, and also to our Pop Center website. Are you asking me if I can just tell you what they are right
gonna
now?
I'll link to it on the site. This is a full-service radio show, Judy.
Don't worry about it. You track them down. That'd be good.
I see that population research. I've actually talked about this on the show before. I had to take a class in demography. I'm still scarred.
Uh-huh.
Still scarred from it. Demography, human rights, and ethics.
Yes.
Still couldn't tell you what demography is, but that's okay. I got a B+, and I was kind of proud of that.
Just the number of people there are. That's all you have to know. Counting people.
Yeah, I wrote that on the final exam. I think he wanted more in this doctoral level class, Judy, just putting that out there.
Of course he did.
Anything coming up we should know about?
I don't think so. I mean, it sounds like you're on top of things. All of these things that are happening at the national level around LGBT inclusion and programs are really critical. And I think the big question is how the Affordable Care Act is going to deal with learning about us, as we mentioned earlier when we were talking about healthcare systems. You know, so there are lots of things happening at state levels, and I guess two key ones of those are battle going on in Massachusetts right now to extend full rights to transgender people, but of course the victory in New York around gay marriage. So pretty it's all good. Happening very fast right now. It's pretty exciting.
It makes for very quick radio shows, let me tell you
I'll bet.
Well, if there is a karaoke night at Summer Institute, will you drop me an email? I'll totally come over.
I will absolutely do that, and I'll invite you to come to any one of our sessions that you'd like to come to.
I'll do a qual session. It would be great.
Okay, cool.
Dr. Judy Bradford, what an absolute treat having you on the show. I love having people on this show who are doing the research, who are putting in the work to really, I mean, this is the stuff that changes the community. Unfortunately, it's not the stuff that we focus in on. We focus in on the singer-songwriters, and we focus in on the actors, and this person came out. But the research on LGBT health, I mean, this undergirds the way that we move forward. And I'm so appreciative for all the work that you and your colleagues are doing there.
Thank you so much, Ken. We're people, too.
You are people, too. See, a qualitative person doesn't even need to say that, but yes. An absolute treat having you on. Keep doing this research.
Thank you so much. This is a real treat.
All the best, Judy.
Thanks, Ken.
Thank you.
You bet.
Young man, there's no need to feel down. I said, young man, pick yourself off the ground. I said, young man, cause you're in a new town. There's no need to be unhappy. Young man, there's a place you can go. I said, short on your dough, you can stay there, and I'm sure you will find many ways to have a good time. It's fun to stay at the YMCA. It's fun to stay at the YMCA. They have everything for your men to enjoy. You can hang out with all the boys. It's fun to stay at the YMCA.
All right, folks, and we are back. Time to welcome another guest. Other guest, are you ready?
I'm ready.
You are ready. I love when you're ready. Robin Oakes is a longtime activist and the editor of the Bisexual Resource Guide and the new anthology, Getting By, Voices of Bisexuals Around the World. You've seen it. It's been out there. Her writings have been published in multiple journals all over the place and anthologies. She's a professional speaker. She's a workshop leader. My favorite quote, and I've told you this before, when Kate Bornstein referred to Robin as the, quote, absolute goddess of sexual fluidity, she was honored with the Susan J. Hyde Activism Award for Longevity in the Movement at the 21st National Conference for LGBT Equality, Creating Change. She's not been on our Rainbow Airwaves since May 6th, 2009. Robin Oakes, welcome back to this show, So Gay.
Thank you, Ken. It feels like forever.
It feels like forever.
I've missed you so much.
Oh, well, thank you. I've missed you. What have you been doing since May 6th, 2009?
Oh, this and that here and there. but on related to the show, one thing that I've been doing is listening to your podcast on my iPhone.
I love it.
I take walks almost every single day, and I listen to a show, and I'm going through your show sequentially.
Love it.
And I'm only about a year behind.
Oh, good. You'll catch up. You'll catch up. I'm excited for you to get to show 100.
Because I'm making progress.
I will say that show 100 was one of the most emotional shows that we've done. So that was, you'll get there. You'll get
there.
Did
I bring tissues?
I was really emotional. We had Judy Shepherd on the show. And I was a train wreck because that was a really pivotal moment for me when Matthew Shepard was murdered. And in many ways, she became my mom. And so having her on the show was just, it was the perfect guest for the 100th show. So you'll get there. You'll get there.
And I'll start packing tissues.
It might not be a bad idea. And by the way, happy anniversary.
Thank you.
How was it?
It was great. Peg and I just celebrated 7 years of being legally married in the state of Massachusetts on May 17th.
And tell people what May 17th, 2004, why that day was significant.
That was the first day that marriage was legal in the United States.
Very cool.
That happened in the state of Massachusetts.
Did you guys do anything cool for your anniversary?
No.
No.
I'm sure we had breakfast and we had dinner.
Lovely. And did we celebrate when there was some news in New York?
Oh, the New York thing was so amazing. I listened to the legislative hearings, New York State Senate hearings online, and I watched it live, and I did have my tissues out. I was in tears when they voted.
Oh.
I was so happy.
It was really nice. It was just one of those nice things, and it came right before Pride. And then look, your anniversary came right before Northampton Pride, did it not?
It came right after Northampton.
It was right after.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I just feel that they have Northampton Pride to celebrate your anniversary. I've connected them.
Well, this year they kind of did.
Yeah, that's fine. I've not been. I got to come down. It's not even that far away. All right. Well, we have, as always, so much to talk about. Any big buy news that we should know about before we get started? Anything happening lately that's in the news?
Well, there's been that very interesting court case involving the baseball players.
Yes. Yes, I just read about that.
Oh, my goodness. Well, what happened is that there are a bunch of, I guess they're called LGBT softball leagues.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a rule in the leagues that they have to have no more than 2 straight players on the team.
Okay.
And apparently, after one of the teams did very well, somebody challenged their team and said that they had more than the requisite number of straight players, and they challenged 3 of the guys who identified as bisexual and said that they weren't gay enough or something. And then there were all these hearings, and I can't even imagine what they must have said.
Right.
Show it. Prove it.
Prove it.
How gay are you?
Show me your little black book. Yes.
I mean, it was bizarre, right? And it went to court, and the National Center for Lesbian Rights was defending these 3 guys. And, it's just disgusting.
Crazy.
And it played out, and I think there was also there were a whole lot of other issues. Like, the 3 players who were being challenged all happened to be African American. And so there was all kinds of racial undertones, and it was horrible. It was horrible. And then, but I think what ended up happening was that their right to discriminate was upheld, which I feel very badly about that.
I feel pretty badly about that.
And I wanted to, like, how do you decide whether someone is gay enough?
Right.
Maybe you would know, because you're like, this show is so gay.
This show is so gay.
How do you decide whether something is so gay enough?
There's a threshold. Well, it's interesting. So there, I think I talked about this a little bit last week, so you'll hear it in about a year. We have this local, it's called ibrattleboro.com, and it's basically like a local discussion board where anyone can start any thread and people respond. And I'm not convinced that, I think there's only really like 20 posters, but it seems like a lot of people interact with it. So I think a lot more people are reading. So a few weeks ago, someone put up a thread, and the name of the thread was a bi word. So I'm thinking, okay, well, this is interesting, because I usually put all the gay content on there. And it was a rant saying that it's just ridiculous how much the L's and the G's have taken advantage of the B's. That the B's have been misappropriated by the L's and the G's and really subsumed, and their identity, the bisexual identity, has been taken away by the lesbian and gay community. And I thought something happened. You know, it's because it made a specific reference to Pride. And I wrote and said, oh my gosh, what happened? But it was just more general, that in general, the bisexual identity is subsumed by being part of the L's and the G's. What do you think?
I don't know. I really don't know what that particular conversation was about. I know that I've heard some discussion over time about, like, there's often this way that we have this competition, like, who does this famous person belong to?
Right.
Are they really a lesbian? Are they really bisexual? Are they really gay? Are they really bisexual? Do they belong to the transgenders? Or do they belong to the gays? Or things like that. And it's almost as though people can only be claimed by one community.
Right.
And, of course, if somebody's already dead and you don't have any documentation, you don't know what they really were anyway. You don't know how they thought about themselves unless they told you. But that might be part of it. And there is a certain way that, like, good gay historical figures, well-behaved ones, are often claimed by, like, the lesbian and gay community as one of ours. And the bad guys, anyone who is badly behaved, is like, we don't want those people.
No, of course not.
Oh, no, they're not part of us. But I think it's silly, because I think we can all claim, you know, our heroes. And I also don't think of us as separate communities. In my mind, we're really, you know, one big overlapping, multifaceted mess.
Well, but so that, I think, was the inherent question in the post, and I'll forward it to you, was, do the bees have any place in the alphabet soup of LGBT?
Of course we do.
Right. That's what I tried to say. And that separating them out can be, of course, very powerful, just in terms of group pride and making changes and all that, but that taking them out altogether and not having the groups work together, that didn't make a lot of sense to me.
No, we have to work together. We will not achieve our goals if we don't.
There you go.
Yeah, we won't. We need every single one of us, and we need all of our allies to achieve equality.
I was looking for validation in what I wrote. You provided it.
I'm always there to validate you, Ken.
I want to talk about public speaking. Now, I think one could argue that you do a fair amount of public speaking.
I do so much public speaking.
What is it? Now, I feel that you've also done what I've done and been to some presentations that weren't so great. Not yours or mine. Ours are.
Oh, great. Never mine.
No,
or
no,
yours.
No. Neither one of ours. What do you think makes for a good public speaker?
A good public speaker is a good storyteller. A good public speaker is someone who shows as well as says.
Mm-hmm.
A good public speaker is someone who, frankly, isn't boring.
Right.
And a good public speaker is someone who speaks with people and doesn't just talk to them or talk at them.
If someone said, what is Robin's public speaking style, how would you describe it?
Friendly, accessible, clear.
Hmm.
I mean, what I try to do is I try to, whenever I speak, I understand that every single audience is different.
Right.
And you can't have one size fits all talks, because you need to figure out where people are and start where they are.
And you do, I assume you do Q&As when you do your presentations?
Absolutely, and that for me is the most, you know, most interesting part.
Question that caught you, I mean, this is so silly to ask you because you've done so many presentations, but can you think of questions that just caught you so off guard?
Only one. I'm thinking of one.
Tell me.
Well, I spoke at a conference a couple of years ago. I keynoted. And afterward, someone stood up and said, made a comment that started, well, bisexual people hurt queer and transgender and gay and lesbian people, or something like that. And like, it was this question that wasn't really a question, but was a statement, and just started off with these amazingly hurtful assumptions. And I was a little bit verklempt, a little flabbergasted, a little bit speechless for a moment, because it just felt there was so many layers of hostility in that question, and I didn't even know where to begin to answer it.
I feel like you handled it deftly.
I probably didn't, but I would if it happened again.
You
know what happens a lot as a speaker? What happens is that, and this happens in real life too, is that somebody will say something and you are speechless, and you don't say what you wish you had said. You don't even know what to say. And then you go home and you think, oh, I wish I had said this. Like,
right.
You have the perfect zinger, the perfect comeback, the perfect response, the perfect explanation. And then what I try to do is, when that happens, I do try to go home and think about what I would have, should have, and put that into my toolbox.
Now, I have to tell you, I'm in a really weird place with public speaking these days. I've actually begged off gig after gig after gig. I'm not really doing much anymore, because I've gotten to the point where I'm getting tired. I've gotten to the point where I've started getting angry, and I find that doesn't make for a good presentation.
No.
Because I get called in to talk about, you know, to talk about my research with LGBT youth, to talk about this, to talk about the phrase "that's okay," all this different stuff, and being a gay administrator, and I go in and I find that I'm doing 9 times out of 10 LGBT 101, and I think I don't want to do that anymore.
And that is wonderful that you know your limits.
Yeah. I start to get angry and I start thinking, wait, you know what? I actually just need you to know some of this stuff already.
one of my workshops that I do is called Self-Care for Activists.
Look at that. I need that workshop.
Uh-huh. And part of what I do in the workshop is I have the participants think of strategies for self-care. But one of my messages that I make sure gets across is that I try to get people to think about activism as a lifetime commitment.
Yeah.
We're not going to solve homophobia anytime soon. And even if we did, there'd be other issues that needed our attention.
Right.
And so basically I try to think of activism as a lifetime commitment. And that means taking care of yourself. That means that if something starts to feel like it's no fun anymore, it's okay to take a break. It's okay to do something else instead. It's okay to switch your strategies.
See, I'm feeling better already.
Yeah, and it's okay to step aside and let somebody else.
Because there are other people. And speaking of the next generation coming up and doing this work, Campus Pride Summer Leadership Camp starts next week.
It does. It starts on Monday.
What are you doing with them?
I am going to be on faculty.
Lovely.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Now, for folks who don't know what that is, tell us all about it.
Campus Pride Summer Leadership Camp is a week-long leadership camp for LGBTQ and ally
Great.
College students. And we bring together, this year I think there'll be 42 or so college students from all over the country.
Nice.
And we do all kinds of programming and education aimed toward you know, increasing people's leadership skills and helping them develop skills that they want to develop. And it's very, very focused on getting stuff done. So each student during the course of the week comes up with an action plan that's theirs, that's geared toward some need at their own school.
Right.
And the idea is that they'll learn a lot of skills and bring them back. And then, of course, the other purpose of camp is that people build these amazing connections with each other, and it's the most wonderful and exciting experience. And as a faculty member, I get so much pleasure out of watching people experience this week.
Love it.
Oh, it's beautiful.
I've sent students to it. Students of mine have attended, and they just come back just so... They come back different. They come back not just energized, as you would expect, but mm-hmm. with a focus towards action that mm-hmm. is just inspiring.
Yeah, and one of the things that I think happens is that on most campuses, there are, you know, a handful of people doing leadership around LGBT mm-hmm. advocacy. And it's really easy to feel alone.
Yeah.
It's really easy to feel like there aren't that many of you out there. And the reality is that there are a lot of people out there. They're just spread all over the country. And so when they get together and share stories and share successes and horror stories and traumas and victories and everything else, and just talk to each other, they leave there feeling so much less alone,
yeah.
so much less isolated, and it's just a joy to behold.
And to be clear, there are many administrators that feel that way as well.
Oh yeah, and in fact, this year we're having an advisor track for the first time.
Look at that.
I know, and it's starting off, you know, it's the first time they're trying it, but the idea is that the advisors too feel that way, and mostly that's true because they're the only one of their kind on their campus.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're usually the one person on most campuses charged with, you know, helping and supporting LGBT youth, and that's a very lonely job.
I think I've said this on the show before. I actually left my first job after my master's program. I left my first job because I got really tired of being the go-to gay.
Mm-hmm.
I was exhausted.
Exactly.
I was exhausted. And even now, it's amazing to me how that still kind of happens, where we were having an LGBT speaker at our commencement this year, and of course, we have to show the bio to Ken to make sure that it's palatable. And for the record, it wasn't.
What's the gay position on this, Ken?
Yeah, how would the gays feel? How would they receive this introduction? And I'm thinking, oh God, I'm sure it's fine. And then I read it and thought, no, that's not fine. That's not good. You can't say that. We don't want to normalize what you just said. So it's so funny. On the one hand, I was really appreciative that I was being asked. And on the other hand, I was just really annoyed, which is again why I've stopped doing so much public speaking because I'm angry and annoyed.
Yeah, and it's really powerful to get together with other people and be able to talk about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, with so many, gosh, you're doing so many other things. There's so many other things I want to talk about. The Bi Women newsletter. I've actually never seen the Bi Women newsletter.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you can see it right online.
Where do I go?
You go to biwomenboston.org.
Okay.
And you can read about 2 years of back issues online.
Nice.
And Bi Women is a, do you want me to tell you about Bi Women?
I would love you to.
I had a feeling that this was a lead in. Bi Women is, I'm very smart that way sometimes.
You are.
Sometimes. So Bi Women is a quarterly newsletter. It's produced out of Boston, and its target audience is bi women. That said, you don't have to be bi to read it, and reading it will not turn you bi.
Okay. That's
and you don't
good
have to be a woman to read it, and reading it will not turn you into a woman.
Is that disclaimer very prominently displayed?
No.
Okay.
But I do say that often, because I think that often, I mean, one of my goals is not just to provide a forum for bi women to talk about their lives, which is what the primary purpose is, but it's also to help educate other people.
Right.
So it's for people who want to understand, you know, bi women better, understand bisexuality better, and it's basically an open forum. It's a newsletter that is, I really try hard to get all kinds of different people to write for it, all kinds of different women. Its readership and writership are both international.
Great.
We have readers from many, many different countries now, and every issue I have a column that I write called Bis Around the World.
Nice.
And we focus on one woman somewhere in the world, and that's been really, really interesting. This last issue took us to Eastern Europe. You know, we've been to China, we've been to India, we've been to New Zealand, we've been to Poland.
Wow.
It's really a lot of fun to do that piece.
Some cultural differences, I would imagine.
Yeah, so some of the questions are, you know, asking, like, what is it like in your, you know, where you are? Like, what's reality like on the ground where you are? You know, what, even understanding of, like, constructions of sexuality, you know, how is it constructed where you are? You know, what's the, like, legal, political, yeah, atmosphere? Is it, you know, is it legal? Is it safe to be you?
Right.
Is it, you know, and also I'm very interested in the question of transnational activism. So one of my questions for people is often, you know, does it matter to communicate with people in other places?
Yeah.
You know, what do you get from that? What do you learn? And what can you give to other people?
That's such an important, and that perspective is just, I don't know, I'm finding that perspective is not often on the table. It's like, all right, well, what's the difference right now between what's going on in Vermont and New Hampshire? Well, that's important, sure, but a more global perspective would be great, too.
Yes, it would.
Yes, it would.
This is a very, very big world with many, many, many different realities.
It's apparently bigger than New England.
Even bigger.
Even bigger.
Even bigger than the whole United States.
Let's not overwhelm people here, Robin. That would be a little bit too much. And there's upcoming conferences. I could go to a conference. I've never been to a bi conference.
Oh, they're great.
What's coming up?
Well, since we're talking about New England.
Yes.
The next conference coming up is called Transcending Boundaries.
I like Transcending Boundaries.
And the website is transcendingboundaries.org.
Okay.
And that's a really interesting conference. You know how, like LGBTQQIA ... mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. This conference is for everybody after LNG.
Wow.
Like all the people who usually get left out of the conversation. And, you know, so there's a lot of bi and trans and intersex and pansexual and all kinds of other sexual people. And by the way, there also are lesbian and gay people who come.
Yeah, I want to go.
Yeah, it's a really great conference. And this year it's on 11/11/11.
Yes, I'm seeing that right.
And that weekend.
Close by.
And Kate Bornstein is the keynoter.
That's what I see.
And I will be presenting there. I'm doing a couple of programs.
Right in Springfield, Massachusetts.
Right in Springfield, Massachusetts. And it's all weekend. It's Friday through Sunday. And it's quite an experience. And last couple of years, this conference has been going on for a while. And one of the things that it's done a lot of improvement in the last couple of years is that we've had an increasing number of college-age students coming.
Oh, great.
Yeah, because at first it was not so true that it was more older folks. But now it's really a mix of people, including a lot of college-age students, and I think that's a strength.
Well, I can definitely bring a group of students to this.
Yeah. Oh, and it's fun.
Okay. Gosh, there's so many different things going on, Robin. This is why we have you on the show.
Can I get all nostalgic?
Yes.
Years and years and years ago, there was a conference called Safe Colleges, which doesn't exist anymore.
Okay.
And there was a group of Marlboro students that came down to that conference every year.
Huh. Was it Jody Clark?
Absolutely, it was Jody Clark.
You know who
I bring a whole posse of students.
You know who I just hired as my new director of housing and residential
life? You didn't.
I did. Jody Clark coming back to Marlboro College.
You are so lucky.
I know.
Oh, wow.
And I should say to our listening audience, we're not just name dropping here. You guys all know, our listening audience, that Jody is one of the regular co-hosts of this show, Is So Gay.
No way.
Oh, did you not know that?
No.
Oh, yes.
No.
Oh, Jody is often one of our co-hosts. You'll get there as you work your way through.
I'm only at the show 20 something.
She's going to be very upset with me that I did this without her, but she's away right now, and we had an interview to record. But no, Jody Clark is one of the regular co-hosts of this show, Is So Gay.
Oh, this show just improved in my esteem. Oh, wow.
That's so funny.
What great taste you have, Ken.
Well, thank you. It took me 126 shows, but I'm there. I'm getting there. We do have to talk about your musical selection for this evening.
Oh, right.
Because this is, let's be clear, this is one of my favorite songs of all time.
It is, me too.
It is one of my favorite songs of all time. And so I'm going to challenge you to really, because people are going to hear, all right, so what is the guest going to say that this song says about them? And this is going to be a really easy one, but not with Robin Oakes. Robin Oakes is going to peel back so many different layers on this one. And it's not going to be, I'm giving you time to come up with something. It's not going to be just the obvious, well, of course, it's the title. We understand. It's going to be, no, you don't understand what this says about her. And she's going to let you know. So Robin Oakes, what does I am what I am say about Robin Oakes?
Well, here's the thing.
I gave you so much time there, so here we go.
This better be good, right? So the thing is, I think that we carry around so much guilt and so much shame and so much embarrassment about being who we are because we're not taught that it's okay to be different.
Yeah.
And this song is all about affirmation and celebrating yourself. And that you're the one that needs to celebrate yourself.
Yeah.
That needs to come from within. Like, there's some lines in that song that I just love and that make me feel good.
Yeah.
I am what I am. I am my own special creation.
Sometimes the ace, sometimes the deuces.
I deal my own deck, sometimes the ace, sometimes the deuces. There's one life and there's no return and no deposit. One life, so it's time to open up your closet. Life's not worth a damn till you can shout out, I am what I am. I mean, I love it. I love it.
And for folks who want more on this, Ken Schneck and Robin Oakes will be appearing at karaoke night at Divas in Northampton
very soon. In your dreams.
Very soon. Divas. It's going to be a headline night.
I talk. I don't sing. But I could talk about.
There you go. Well, that's great. I love that song. That's going to play out this tonight show, and people are going to be just jamming into next week. So, now, of course, tell everyone where they can go to learn more about all the cool things that you're doing.
Oh, my website is robinoakes.com, and that is spelled in a way that you would not necessarily guess. So it's robinoochs.com,
nice.
robinoakes.com. And the By Woman newsletter is at bywomanboston.org. And on my website, I have a whole bunch of articles posted. I have all kinds of links and resources to other great places and pages. I have a couple of talks that I've given on video that are videotaped. I even have some links to some podcasts, including my appearance in 2009 on
May 6, 2009. This show is so gay.
That's right. So there's lots and lots and lots of stuff to be accessed and found there.
And I promise next time you're back on the show, Jody will be sitting next to me.
Promise?
Oh, she's going to be so angry with me when she comes back and hears that I did this without her.
Oh, Jody.
So glad
that she's there.
Oh, it's going to be great. It's going to be great. And people, our listeners love her. She's one of our listeners' favorite co-hosts. So it works out quite nicely.
Oh, and Marlboro is so lucky to have her. I spoke there once and I loved it.
We got
to
get you back.
I would love to. I had such a great time there.
We'll get you back. We'll get you back. Well, Robin, as I said 2 years ago, I love the work that you're doing. I think that you are taking the time and the dedication to give voice to a community that I think we do string letters together all that often and say, yes, we're doing equal education on each letter. And I don't believe that's true. And you are taking the time to say, look, this is one part of the community, and we're going to raise up this voice because we have something to say. And it is so enormously appreciated by the entire community. So you have fun at camp. Say hi to the students. Say hi to will Shane be there?
Oh, yes, Shane
of course.
Will definitely be there.
Say hi to Shane and just have an amazing, amazing rest of the summer. And let's get you some more speaking gigs.
Okay, Ken. Thanks so much.
All the best, Robin.
See you too.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
And that about wraps it up for another edition of This Show Is So Gay. Thank you so much for listening. Hey, do you have a comment about tonight's show, what you heard tonight? Do you have a guest suggestion? Drop us an email at thisshowisogay@aol.com. Every single email gets answered, of course. Stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com. Listen to past shows. That's what Robin Oakes is doing. She's going through the entire compendium, the whole library of past episodes of This Show Is So Gay, and you can do the same thing by subscribing on iTunes, and there's a link right there on thisshowisogay.com. And of course, if you're on the Facebook, and I feel so many people are, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because you know it, we like you. Get out there, folks. Go do some amazing, amazing things. Do you know what I'm doing this weekend? I should totally tell you. This weekend, I'm going to Dollywood. I'm going to Dollywood. If that does not provide some fodder for next week's This Show Is So Gay, I can't even tell you what would. I'm going to Dollywood. It's going to be funny. So you should tune in next week to hear all about it. But you go out there. If you're not going to Dollywood, you should come with me. But if you're not, go do some incredible things. Go do some research. I don't care if it's qualitative or quantitative. We need more research. So go do some research. Go promote the voices of every single person in the LGBTQ community, and there are more letters than that. Don't leave any letters off. Don't leave any letters off. They are all important, and it's important that we are together as a community. It's a good thing. We can create change like you have no idea. So in order to create change, you got to use your voice. Go use your voice. Go do these things. And remember, while you're doing them, why be gay when you can be so gay?
Tout bas, je vois la vie en rose. Il me dit des mots d'amour, des mots de tous les jours, et ça me fait quelque chose. Il est entré dans mon cœur, une part de bonheur dont je connais l'homme.